Today's episode of the Chromecast is brought to you by Visor for Chromebooks. If you manage Chromebooks for a school or a school district, you'll need to listen to this, especially if you're tracking those Chromebooks in a spreadsheet. Visor for Chromebooks is a Chromebook management solution, and it seamlessly integrates with the Google Admin Console and your student information system. With Visor for Chromebooks, you can easily see which student has which Chromebook, manage repairs, and automate processes for lost or stolen devices, such as notifying parents and remotely disabling the device. So ditch those spreadsheets and do a Google search right now for Visor for Chromebooks. That's V-I-Z-O-R for Chromebooks. Welcome to the Chromecast, the official podcast from Chrome Unboxed, where we unpack everything from hardware to software in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS, so that you can be more informed on all the latest updates, changes, and devices. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Chromecast. My name is Joe Humphrey, and I am joined here today by Gabriel Bringers.
Hello.
And Robbie Payne.
What's up?
So this week, we have some hardware stuff to talk about, like upcoming hardware, the state of things. Robbie's over here knocking his...
Hitting my mic. Like,
because he got the thing. I switched got the thing off the other side.
I want to be able to see my Chromebook.
Yeah.
It's always...
Oh, were you over here before?
No, I went under.
Oh, yeah. I got you.
I brought the mic on top so I can get the whole thing down. And my face.
As soon as we have our video set up, we're going to have to adjust everything anyway.
So yeah.
Don't get too comfortable.
Well, I'm hoping we find a different way put the arms.
Like, I think either...
Some sort of much more concealed, like small little
like
arm
thing in the middle of the table, maybe. I've seen people do that. Or a little small mic stand for the table. I'm hoping when we get the video set up, we'll move the soundboard off. Because like I don't touch this once we start rolling.
You know what would be great?
This is just off. And then
if we look, we can find it. Something that'll have a clamp kind of like what we have.
Yep.
But then has the snaky arm, like this type of arm.
Yeah, snaky arm.
You know, but that holds the mic, and then we just do the puff guard on the top.
Yep.
Right over the mic.
Yep.
And then it's all out of our face.
But like, I went completely under. I was like, be really cool. It just had like a little table that's at a little bit of an angle that has wheels on
with
it.
You.
And that's where your board and all that stuff can go. And it can just sit off to the side.
Yeah, I love that.
Joe's trying to get all this stuff off here, though. That way, if we do video in this,
it looks...
We can just have the video down and we can see...
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like all of this stuff with what you said, and then this stuff out of the way.
Yeah.
That way, the table just looks nice.
Yep,
that would be nice.
It's more aesthetic than it is.
Yeah,
nobody wants to look at us.
We'll mount it all like up underneath the table.
Oh, there we go. Now we're
cables,
thinking.
Cable management.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that. We've mentioned it on here before. We hadn't actually ordered everything yet because we were trying to get our best Chromebooks of 2020 and Gear of the Year, and then. This week, you know, last week we had Thanksgiving, and this week has kind of just been catch up. It kind of felt like a little bit.
Been a weird week.
And so, I mean, it's we are planning on creating a video portion. What's the word I'm looking for?
Video element.
A video element.
Arm. Like,
yes.
You'll be able to watch.
What do you call
a podcast?
A video of a podcast. It's not a video cast.
I like video cast. Let's go with that.
It's a vidcast.
Because I watch, like, I don't listen to... I always say it wrong. Twit. I don't listen to their podcast, but I watch their like this week in Google and stuff like that. I watch those.
Yeah,
but I don't know what they call them. They just call them videos.
Like when people would watch
it's
Howard
like a,
Stern's
yeah,
radio
it's like
show.
Yeah. It's like a it's yeah it's almost like a
just a video element to add to the
I was thinking of like a radio show. I think of like Pat McAfee who does this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Like so we're working on all of that. So stay tuned for that. We'll hopefully. Get all of that stuff ordered here soon and get it all set up and figure out how we're going to do it. In the midst of all this, we're trying to figure out how to create a, as it's called in the film world, a flat. We're going to build some
today
flats.
I learned.
We're going to build some stuff in the studio to create. If you've watched our YouTube videos, you've noticed that we have this awful paneling in the studio.
Yeah, we moved and the studio setup has been fantastic. As
so
far
awesome.
As, like, sound and size of the room and where it
larger,
is it just it's been great it,
larger ceilings less noise like it's been perfect but the walls just suck and when you use even when we use the 30 millimeter like it still looks weird and so we're trying to figure out a way to create basically some fake walls that we're going to be able to move around in the studio essentially what they do for you know if you watch a I don't know your favorite sitcom That's not a house normally.
Wait, what?
That is a studio. That is a fake set. And so
you're telling me Jerry Seinfeld's apartment wasn't filmed on location?
Totally fake, bro. Sorry.
Central Perk?
Can you imagine? Okay.
It's a real coffee shop?
Think about this for a second.
The walls. Exactly. The walls are the problem.
Yeah. Think about this for a second.
I'm a sitcom junkie, bro.
How hard it is to film in here in a pretty concealed location. Right. Imagine trying to be on location in a real apartment trying to film. It'd be a nightmare.
Multiple camera angles.
So that's why studios do this sort of stuff. And so, you know, we're trying to do something similar to that on a very, very small scale. We are just building a wall, basically, that we'll be able to use our wide angle lens with, and we'll be able to use our other lens with, and we'll be able to paint it different colors. We'll be able to put stuff on
it. We're looking at some different materials where it might be nice and light. Mm-hmm. So
we could maybe move
it around or build a couple of them and be able to set up different shots. And,
this has led me down the path of like doing something. I'm pointing at the wall in the podcast studio, like something on this wall too, you know, that is a backdrop, you know, with like, I think of doing like some maybe wood material in here with like the Chromecast as like a, you know, neon sign or something up on the wall. Like we could just do some cool stuff with it. So, we're already off track here, but yeah.
I know, we tried.
I told the guys we were going to create segments today. Really we were going to be very tight.
Look, everything else we do is scripted and just like
feels nice to just
machine.
Get on here.
We get on here, we can just talk. It's nice.
So I don't even know what led us down that path, but we're working on that. Your mic got messed up. Yeah. So a couple quick kind of housekeeping things. We'll talk maybe more about the best of 2020 here in a little bit, but our best Chromebooks of 2020 is out. Go check it out. It's on YouTube. It's on the website. You can find it and check out our top picks basically for the Chromebooks that came out this year. As part of that, we have an amazing giveaway thanks to our friends over at Acer. They have given us a Chromebook Spin. Is it Spin? Chromebook Spin 713.
Yeah.
There we go. And we are giving away that bad boy. The giveaway is going to end here, I think, like 2 weeks or something. So go get entered to win that. We're giving away an awesome Chromebook. It is basically our overall top pick. It won the mid-tier category. And, you know, there's things that it doesn't have. There's things it doesn't have that maybe, you know, a Samsung Galaxy Chromebook has. But as far as an overall top pick for the year, not much. As far as an overall top pick for the year, the 713 is just a knockout Chromebook. And so you definitely need to go get entered to win that Chromebook. So definitely do that. One other quick thing that we put out is the Gear of the Year. And we have a giveaway with that one as well. So I know we're through Black Friday and we're still in Cyber Week, I guess. But all of those lines have been blurred because of all of this crazy stuff that we're living in. And so some of those sales, and I was listening to Waveform, Marquez Brownlee's podcast, and you know they were talking about how Black Friday, you think it's these amazing deals, but if you look, like there's different trackers you can use to see prices of products that you're looking for, and you'll see that like, oh wow, that thing was actually on sale like 3 months ago, and they just brought the price up and then dropped it back down again for Black Friday. Or it's maybe just been that price and they're trying to make you feel like it's always you got to act now, you got to buy it now.
If you want to break out of the matrix and see what that looks like, just find some popular devices that you didn't necessarily buy, or maybe something that you did buy, something that you may feel like you got a really good deal on. Now, understand that you may end up kicking yourself in the behind for this, but just go get what did PayPal just bought? Honey. So you can install their extension, and it has a drop list thing, so you just add your items to that and it lets you know when they drop, and it'll show you a historical graph of items
as
well.
That's what they were talking about.
Go look on Amazon and see where that big deal you got was 6 months ago. Sometimes we catch flack about highlighting deals a lot, but we want to be beneficial to our users. And deals can be had year-round. You know, they're more frequent and they're more forward-facing this time of year. But just because something's a deal right now doesn't mean it won't be a deal 3 months from now either.
Exactly. So. Yeah. And it's funny, too, like the thing that they talked about. And I think we kind of hinted at this, or maybe we talked about it last week, or maybe we've just talked about it internally. Like, you know, you see all these deals. Well, most of the time, those are the products that have been sitting on the shelves that they're trying to get out. They're trying to get out the door. And so you think you're getting this great deal, but maybe it isn't exactly what you wanted. And something like the example they use is like a TV, or, you know, we can use the example of a Chromebook. Like, you know, you might find this amazing deal on this Chromebook. Well, it probably, it has a lower processor, it doesn't have enough RAM, or all these little things that you maybe didn't check that you should have checked the spec sheet on that. And so, yeah, you maybe got a great deal, but you didn't get what you really wanted. So all of that to say, you know, they talked about like TVs, you know, it's like,
right,
yeah, you got this huge, awesome TV, but yeah, the refresh rate sucks on it, and it doesn't TVs do these other things you want. Yeah. And it's been out for 3 years and they're just trying to sell this thing. So all that to say, our Gear of the Year is out, and these are products that we've tested and used, you know, all year. It's stuff that we stand behind, and stuff that we really like and enjoy, and we, you know, these are, there's deals to be had. When you click the links on the Gear of the Year, you'll see kind of a breakdown of where you can buy these products if they're available in multiple places. Some of them are just a link to Amazon, but
right.
You can check those out and find some stuff that's a good buy regardless of being on sale. And something like a Chromebook that you're going to keep for a little while, you don't want to just, you know, go buy something off the what's the word I'm looking for, just
off the rack.
Yeah, you know, you just grab something just because it's on sale. Like, you want to find something that's going to be a good fit for you. So Gear of the Year is out there. We're doing a My Passport 1 terabyte SSD giveaway on there. I need to check when that one's ending. That one might be ending soon. I don't know. I hope I'm not telling people to go check this out and it's already done. I don't think it's done. Somebody Google it. The My Passport SSD on the Gear of the Year. I think that one's managed by the company that we worked with for that.
36 hours.
Ooh.
You have a day and a half.
Ooh, I knew it was close. I was like, dang, I don't want to tell people to go enter.
We have a lot of people entered, but your odds are way better than winning the lottery. So
that's very right. And this thing is awesome. It's super fast. Yeah. It's basically a gig read-write. So it's faster than your internal hard drive on your Chromebook or on your laptop. I mean, it's faster than this MacBook. So I've been using the SanDisk one. It's the rugged version, but it's essentially the same exact thing. It looks the same, except the new one has the metal casing on it, and I really like it. And it's awesome for moving files around if we're sharing stuff between the team, or it's awesome for me for video. I back up all of our video projects on that. Or if you want to back up all of your photos, as Google Photos is getting, you know, getting weird next year, and they're going to cut out their free version. If you just want to back up all your photos, something like this little hard drive that you can throw in a bag easily is good to have around. So go enter to win that as well. What else? What else do I have to talk about?
I don't know.
It's been the Joe Show here.
I know.
I like it.
We got any more giveaways?
Joe's been talking so much.
Dude, we've got other stuff laying around the office. Yeah. I mean, we'll wrap these up and we'll do some more.
We've got, yeah, I mean, that's, it's been really fun. It's been really fun doing all these giveaways. I love doing giveaways because it's so funny. Like, giveaways seem abstract to a lot of people. It's like, oh, I'm going to enter this giveaway. I never win.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you've got pretty good odds with our giveaways, and we're giving away some sweet stuff.
Yeah, and it's cool because I know, I like, when we first started doing this and we were trying to build the website and get some traffic, we steered away from giveaways because we never wanted, it's tough to incentivize people to come to your website because they're not really coming because they want to. Now it's totally different because it's like, we love doing this because we love to give back to the people that, mm-hmm. that have made us what we are. Mm-hmm. So it's so cool when we get to touch base with a real human and be like, hey, you're awesome. Thank you. And by the way, hey, you won this thing. You know?
It's so cool. Whenever I email people, they're always like, oh my gosh, I never win anything. This is amazing. Except for the couple people that I email and they never respond.
Don't respond.
Yeah. So like, people ask me, like people ask on Twitter and on Instagram, like, when's this winner going to be announced? Well, I have to, once we pick a winner, we have to verify that person. And the only way to do that is via email.
Yeah. Because if we pick the winner and then announce it and then that person never comes forward, and they're like, oh, well. Yeah.
And there's been multiple times. I mean, the Lenovo Duet that we just gave away took me a week to verify because I picked somebody, I gave them ample time to respond. They never responded. I sent 3 or 4 messages and I said, okay, sorry, you know, you're going to have to forfeit your prize here. Well, and so
it's weird.
Pick the next person. They responded immediately. You know, it's like,
you assume like, oh, well, why wouldn't they answer? Why wouldn't they do this? But the general consensus for most people is I'm not going to win anyway.
Yeah, I'm so just going to go enter to win.
Not even
this
looking
thing
for it. Like I enter to win stuff sometimes, and I enter and probably leaves my mind about 15 minutes after that, and I don't think about it again. So if it went to an inbox that gets 150 emails a day, then it's a good chance I won't see it.
We were talking watches before we started, and I've kind of gotten into watches over the last year and a half, and I signed up for Crown and Caliber. I signed up for their website, but they were giving away a really, really nice watch. I can't remember what it was. But
they were giving away a Rolex Speedmaster. I signed up for a Speedmaster
from Crown and Caliber. I had signed up for that, and I'm the same way. I'm like, I'm going to sign up, but I was really just signing up because I'm into watches and I wanted to see what they're doing. Well, now I get a lot of marketing emails from Caliber, and every time one comes to me, I'm like, oh, did I win the Speedmaster?
Yeah,
because that's my BHAG right now. My big goal is getting my hands on nice Speedmaster.
Yeah,
and a free one would be even better.
That would be amazing. I'm more in the $200-$300 watch range
absolutely.
Right now.
Yeah. Matter of fact, my smartwatch is the most expensive watch that I own.
I forget how much is the Fossil Gen 5. I think it's $300
it's
retail.
Yeah.
So it's the most expensive watch I own as well.
No, I just found out that they launched a TicWatch Pro 3 TicWatch Pro LTE in Europe, and mine's not LTE, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I've always been interested in those, but at the same time, I'm like, when would I use that?
My old Tick watch is LTE, and I've always thought, man, I would really like to get this set up, but the watch experience wasn't good enough to where I wanted to invest in, because I think you have to go through Verizon and get a free stand, all that.
I guess if you're like out on a run or something, it'd be really nice.
Yeah, I think that'd be kind of cool, but I don't know. I just want it because they have it.
Yeah.
Because that's how we are.
I mean, get one and let's test it out. We need to do a review of that thing, too. Or not that thing. You're not wearing it.
Hey, this one.
We could do a review on that, too. Gabe and I are going to start a whole separate YouTube.
Watches.
Watches Unboxed.
I'll show up one time. Be like, hey, I've been wearing this Fitbit for like a year and a half.
Yeah, Robbie still works. It's going to be Robbie's rant. This is not an Apple Watch. This is my Fitbit that I've been wearing forever.
I do want to get the Sense. Because I think it's going to get Google Assistant first, and it doesn't do a ton more than mine does. Like I'm not looking for it. I like the fact that it has O2 sensor on it, and I think it has some not EKG, it's ECG, something like the basic heart rate stuff. Just I'm getting a little older. I wouldn't mind having some of that stuff.
Absolutely,
just to be there, you know,
just in case.
I try to eat pretty decent. So, but you know, this the second gen of the Versa has been great. The third one doesn't add much to the to this equation. Yeah. So I would have to go to the Sense, and it's like $300. I'm just like, eh.
See, that's why I really like the new Tick watch, because it has the new Snapdragon. It's way better. The battery life's great, but it has all of it has the O2 sensor. It has all of that stuff. So I can look at all the Apple people and be like, my Wear OS watch has all.
I have loved my Fossil, except for the fact that one of the main reasons I got it has stopped working.
Yeah,
perfect. It's Wear OS
so
for
that's
you.
A bit of sarcasm there, if you couldn't hear that. I bought this thing to be able to go on runs and listen to my music while I'm running, and it worked. The GPS worked just fine for a while, and the onboard GPS, if I don't have my phone with me, the GPS on this does not work. So, super cool.
Ugh.
But, you know, Wear OS for you. I don't know if it's Wear OS. I don't know if it's on the Wear OS side or if it's on the Fossil side, but there's multiple people out there. Apparently, like, the GPS, what would it be called, bands or whatever in here, could take up to, like, 10 minutes to connect to a GPS signal. Okay, so that's a failure right there. And then most of the time, even if I've waited, I've started Strava on my watch, left it there hoping that it'll connect, and it never connects. Like, I've waited 15 minutes to try, so anywho. Okay, well, we've been talking about some random stuff. We're going to take a quick break.
TimeUnbox.com.
We're going to take a quick break.
Go figure out our lives.
Yeah, we're going to come back and actually talk about some Chromebooks. Okay. This podcast is brought to you by NordVPN. We recommend the service, and we use NordVPN because they keep your browsing secure and private on any device. Whether you're using a Chromebook, an Android device, a Mac, an iPhone, or a Windows device, NordVPN is going to protect your browsing. They also have 24/7 customer support in case you ever have any issues, and they offer a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to learn more and maybe give it a try, head over to chromeunbox.com/Nord, N-O-R-D. Alrighty, welcome back, guys. We are going to dig into some Chrome OS and Chrome hardware stuff, as promised. So let's talk the state of tablets. That's the largest umbrella I can give this.
The state of Chrome OS tablets.
There you go.
We have to be a little more specific.
Let's not talk about iPads. Let's not go down that whole path.
Well, I mean, because if we're talking Android tablets, like we're talking about Samsung.
Yeah. The state of
technically the Fire tablets.
No.
let's call it the state of Chrome tablets.
Chromeblitz.
Yeah, Amazon, that whole thing's dead to me. I tried to install the Luna app on my Chromebook the other day. Amazon wouldn't let me do it.
Yeah, heck with that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, so there's just been some cool stuff developing and happening in the space that makes the idea of a Chrome OS tablet just odd right now, because to me it's exciting. There's some things developing right now that are as exciting as anything I think in the tablet space for Chrome OS. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, it's not like we're seeing a bunch of it. There's a period when like the baseboard that was being developed called Kukui, which is the baseline for the Lenovo Chromebook Duet. When it was being developed, we just kind of assumed a bunch of these would be tablets. They're ARM-based, and we saw there was one detachable. And as time went on, and then the Duet came out, I remember writing a piece a few weeks after the Duet was announced. It was somewhere between it being delivered and it showing up at CES, saying, this device is way more unique than we first thought. Like, we just kind of thought, like, this is one of many, and it's actually just one of kind of two that showed
essentially
up.
Essentially, yeah.
You know, in the second tablet that came out with this chipset is literally made by Lenovo and is the same thing, basically, just ruggedized. Same screen, same everything, honestly, for the most part. So we started looking at it, and it's like, oh, well, you know, 2020 now has gone by, has elapsed almost, and that was it for tablets. So to be like, oh, you know, Chrome OS is still all about tablets, that's not just a stretch. That's not even true at all. And now we have the Pixel Slate has completely been discontinued. Yeah. You know, and gosh, it's so far out of my mind, I forgot the name of it.
That one Google Pixel 4a. You know, that one.
Because Google made it clear they're not going to make tablets anymore. No, that's fine. Like, we've made peace with that. I think everybody else that's talked about it has made peace with this. Like, Google doesn't have to make, there doesn't have to be a Google-made tablet. I mean, if we look at Chrome OS devices, other than repeating itself with the Pixel, the original, you know, 2013, 2015 Pixel, Google hasn't repeated itself once with its own made Chromebooks.
Nope.
Which shows you it makes them in order to push the market into a spot, and then it moves on to something else. So the fact that Google's not going to make its own tablets isn't like indicative of where tablets are. And so we kind of pushed back against that and said, no, you know, other people are going to make tablets. Well, then 2020 is come and gone, and we basically got one tablet. Mm-hmm. I mean, the 10e is just a ruggedized version of the Duet. So,
and you still can't buy the keyboard for it, which blows my mind. I don't understand
Why didn't they just make...
Whatever.
Anyway, so it would be realistic for someone to look at the state of tablets, Chromebook tablets right now, and say, it's not good. Like, it's dying. It's falling off. We do have one other tablet that's based on the same baseboard as the Duet, and it's called Kakadu, which always makes us smile when we say
Kakadu.
It. Kakadu. And
you know,
I'm not sure who's making
board
it.
Names.
Probably could dig around a little bit and maybe come up with that now. There's probably enough commits. We'd probably find an email from somebody and eventually hunt that down, but whatever.
Put that on my list.
My bet would be like Asus and Education.
Yeah,
Asus.
So or like, one of these white label ones.
Yeah,
maybe.
It's going to be a Lenovo 10e style thing. That's my guess. I don't think we're going to see a major consumer release of another MT8183 tablet. I just don't. I could be wrong, but I don't think that's going to happen because we have a lot of other ARM chips coming. And that part of the state of where we are with tablets is twofold. Part of it is Intel processors and tablets just don't make a lot of sense. Even the mobile ones, like I think maybe now, maybe with Jasper Lake, we talked about this last week, but maybe as Jasper Lake brings enough performance with, you know, mobile centric type processing where it's, you know, something that can be in a fanless thin design, maybe those processors finally make the case for tablets with Intel inside. But it's been tough so far, and probably the best version of this was the HP X2. A lot of people liked that. We liked it. You know, we thought it was a great Chromebook. The problem with the HP X2 was the fact that it came in one configuration, and it had the potential to be really powerful and just didn't. It stayed at 4 gigs of RAM. Was it 32 gigs of storage, too?
I think it was 64, but...
I remember it just being annoying, because it's like, just ship one with more storage and more RAM in it. Like, the M3 that was in it wasn't amazing, but it was enough. You know, it would have been fine. But it had, you know, the Pixelbook screen, and it had, you know, it looked good. The nice white back and the pop-off, you know, key, like, there were a lot of really cool things, and it was like, oh, cool. Like, this is a great way to go. Like, it handled way better, I thought, than the Slate. Like, mm-hmm. It felt better in your hands than the Slate, I think because it had some squared-off edges. Like, there were some benefits. It was still a huge tablet and a little ridiculous. I mean, anybody who's carrying around an iPad, the big iPad Pro, and saying that they love that as a tablet is probably lying to you. They spent a lot of money.
Unless they, like, draw on it or something.
It's confirmation bias. Yeah. But to use it as a tablet where I'm just sitting back and this is a leisurely tablet for me to use, no, they don't. They probably put it in the keyboard most of the time and use it as a tablet. Yeah, like drawing or some specific thing. But as a casual thing, they probably go pick their iPhone up more than likely. And so, you know, those big tablets are just... Those are kind of weird, even though HP, I think, did pretty good with the X2.
Yeah, I think overall it was I don't want to say it was the best thing going because it was about the only thing going, but they did a really great job of design. But yeah, it did 32 gigs of RAM, storage.
Geez. Yeah,
32 gigs of RAM, that's
cheese
pretty
and crackers.
that's what held it back to me the whole time.
Didn't get another configuration like overseas or something?
Yeah, I think there wasn't an 864, maybe, but it never made it out of like one country, I think, or something. So there were some issues with it, and we kind of always thought that they would just do another one, and not really sure where they are on that. But, you know, it's just been a weird run for Chrome OS tablets. And don't get me wrong, I think Chrome OS in general belongs and fits better on a touchscreen clamshell or a touchscreen convertible. It's kind of at home there. But the devs are really doing a lot of work on tablet mode. And while I know people do use convertibles in tablet mode, they flip them around from time to time, it's odd to me that they would put that much work into this if they didn't see on the roadmap. Because you got to remember, it's not like Google's sitting by blindly wondering who's going to make the next device. They know way in advance of people that are planning on stuff because Google has to give the okay to every one of them.
Yeah, they don't. There's not a Chromebook made that Google didn't surprise them, sign off on. Yeah,
right.
Because I mean, we talk with some of these smaller OEMs and we know how this works. They're in the middle of every bit of it.
Yeah,
and it can be a headache sometimes, but it's the reason the Chrome OS ecosystem works the way that it does.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like Google's not surprised by this, and I don't think that they would be doing all the tablet-y stuff that they've been doing over the last 6 months or so if they didn't think that there were quite a few coming. So now we move on to the point where now we have Qualcomm ARM chips, and then MediaTek's kind of revived interest in Chrome OS. You know, it's not just, hey, we're going to make one here and one there. Now we've got two new chips coming out. We talked about those before.
Built for Chromebooks.
Yeah, like we're going to completely craft these things for Chromebook devices, Chrome OS devices. And part of that, like, you can't tell me that we only have two boards we're tracking right now for the MT8192, which is the mid-tier MediaTek chip. That will change probably a lot here soon because Asurata has been in development for 7 months, I think, or 8 months.
Not longer.
Maybe longer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've built the groundwork. And granted, maybe with these new chips, these newer chips, they had to do a little bit more work. It wasn't just regurgitating some old chips. Like, they've built these, and they're making sure the cores are working well with Chrome OS stuff. So it may take a little bit longer before we start seeing boards branch off. That's what happened with Snapdragon. Mm-hmm. You know, we had Cheza forever, and it was being built on the Snapdragon 845. And then Trogdor was the only other one, and it was this SE-7180, and we're like, what the heck is that? And then we finally figured out, like a year later, that's going to be the 7C, and then we didn't see a lot of boards, and we still haven't seen a ton of boards yet, and my gut tells me that with ARM chips and with the way they can customize that silicon, that they have a much, it's much easier once most of the stuff is laid out for them to start spawning boards off of it. Mm. It's not as much work at the end of the day, and so hopefully we'll start seeing more 8192 devices, but we only have two boards we're tracking, so it's impossible to know, oh, the majority of those are going to be clamshells, and maybe we'll get a couple tablets. Half of them could be. Mm. We could get 20 MT8192 devices in the next year, and half of them could be tablets. We just don't know at this point, but it's well-suited for that kind of stuff. And then the 8195 we don't know about. So there's two chips from MediaTek that are coming to, you know, that should round out the tablet market a little bit, but we're not sure. And then we've got the Snapdragon 7C stuff coming, and only one of those, now there's only like six boards, but there's only one of them that we know is going to be a tablet at this point. And again, it's like, you know, here's the stuff, everything's kind of ready, and they're doing all this software work on tablet mode, like, where are the tablets, where are they coming from? And then in the mix of that kind of like confusing scenario that we have with Chrome OS tablets right now, you've got Coach Z, which is this tablet that looks like it's going to like answer all of that. Like for me as a user, it's going to answer like all the things I've wanted from a Chrome OS tablet all along. Like the size is right, the resolution's right, it's got a kickstand finally instead of needing some sort of keyboard in order to stand up for itself. It has USI compatibility. It's, you know, the pen's going to have what looks like a magnetic place for it to go. And, you know, and I think, we don't know yet, but the 7C is going to be a good performer in Chromebooks. So not going to be the best. It's not going to blow your mind, but I think it's going to stand up and perform similar to like a Core i3 or, you know, a little bit under that. And so it's going to move along fine, but it's going to get insane battery life too. It's like, it answers all of these questions we have about tablets, and the size is going to be right. Like, yeah, it's not, they're not going to try to make some goofy 16:9 tablet. It's a 3:2, which is a great aspect ratio for a tablet. It's 11-inch device, which we've not seen in Chromebooks. We have 11.6-inch 16:9 clamshell cheap Chromebooks.
Right, but that's,
we don't have an 11-inch 3:2 device.
And that is the sweet spot, because we've seen the 12, what is it, 12.3?
12.3 was the Pixelbook, yeah, and the Pixel Slate, and the, well, HP X2.
The X2. And the X2 is a good tablet, but it still feels a little bit unwieldy.
A little too large, yeah.
And then the 10.1 ones, they feel like they belong in a classroom, because that's where they belong.
And the Duet, I will say, like, as far as like sitting back, like, you know, there's two types of uses for tablets that have keyboards. You have lean back stuff, which is read content, read a book, play a game, that kind of stuff, keeping up on the news. And then there's lean forward stuff where you're at a keyboard. The 10-inch device fails ever so slightly at lean forward stuff. Like for me, I would not want to work long term on a 10-inch tablet.
No.
It's just a little too small.
Yeah.
And I've done it. I've done it here in the office. Yeah. I haven't used their keyboard because that's just too cramped. But I have, you know, put an external dock keyboard. It, yeah. And if I could dock it to a screen, no big deal. But I can't with the Lenovo. So, you know, I put a keyboard out in front of it and an external mouse and sat there and worked and wrote a few articles. And it's usable, you know, even if it weren't slow.
Start
it's
to
still,
feel that strain.
Yeah,
though.
You just feel, yeah, you feel cramped.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think 1 inch on a screen is going to just completely fix that. And it's everything you need. But a couple things happen, you know, at that extra inch, you're getting an 11-inch 3:2 screen, which is going to probably, I'm completely guessing here, I bet height-wise will get you somewhere in the realm of a 13.3 inch.
Yep.
So take your Pixelbook Go, and that screen's tall enough for me to get some stuff done. You know, lose some screen real estate on the left and right, which you don't generally
really
use.
Yeah.
Things don't feel so cramped anymore.
Do we know resolution?
It's Quad HD. Yeah, so Quad HD Plus. So it's going to be high res. So nice to look at up close.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, if it was just 1080p at that size it would be perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And then this is the display they're testing, and so it
could change,
very well
yeah.
could. You know, they want to make sure to nail the aspect ratio, and if they're going to have variants that have different screens, like they want to obviously test for those things. But I mean, that's the panel they've got in it right now that they're working on. So you had all that stuff together, and it's like, yeah, I know tablets, Chrome OS tablets are in a weird spot, and if you were looking in from the outside, you could probably make a case that
probably just done.
Chrome OS tablets might just never see those again. And then you've got this thing, and just, you know,
kind of out of the blue, honestly.
This week, you know, it looks like it's going to be made by HP. Pretty solidly going to be made by HP, and they make some pretty sweet kickstanding tablets. Mm-hmm. That Spectre Elite X2, I think, is just really sweet looking, and everybody kind of loved the HP X2. The biggest complaint against it was the keyboard wasn't the greatest, but they were trying to do that clamp-in, clamshell-style keyboard, which that's a weird proposition, because it's like, do you add enough weight into the bottom of that thing? Because there's no kickstand, so it's got to stand up from that hinge.
Has to hold that.
And they didn't want to do that, because then you're making it a four-pound device, and it's like, because you got so much weight in the top of the device, it creates a bunch of problems. You can see that in, who's done it best? Microsoft's Surface Book.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of clamped, not the Surface Pro, but the Surface Book, where the big, it's like a 15-inch device, which, again, I don't know anybody that wants to pick that up and play around with it unless it's for professional use. Anyway, I think Coach Z just kind of nails all of this stuff the right way. Like, a really good kickstand, and HP, again, has done this. You know, they've probably just taken some of Microsoft stuff and reverse engineered it. But, you know, Microsoft figured out a great hinge scenario. And to be fair, even though it's cheap, the Duet has a pretty decent hinge when the back's on it.
It's not bad.
But that back adds more thickness. It's another thing to deal with. Like, to be able to just close that hinge up and that be gone,
it's
while you're holding it,
and it feels built in.
Yeah,
you know,
that's just a better solution for a tablet. And so now you've taken care of that, and that hinge mechanism works decently well on your lap. I mean, it does. I mean, I can take the Lenovo and use it in my lap if I need to.
Although the B-roll,
you gotta get creative.
Yeah, the B-roll of you using it in Vegas is kind of funny.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Because your like legs are together.
Yeah,
you're all hunched in. You know, trying to make it work.
It's not like you, hey, I'm
gonna sit and work on this
on my lap every day, all day. So what device should I get? Probably not something with a kickstand. But you can make it work.
Absolutely.
Especially if it's a device that you're going, hey, I'm only going to do that every once in a while. Most times I'm doing this, or most times I'm doing that. And ultimately, if it's a device that runs fast enough and you can bring it in and dock it at your desk and use your big monitor and all that kind of stuff, like, the use cases all of a sudden get real interesting.
Well, it's like,
it's an ARM and it's Snapdragon. Yeah. So, guess what? All my games run really well on it too. So maybe I can play some PUBG on here, and maybe I can play some Call of Duty.
It's finally like, the dream that we've talked about. You know, right. It's this idea of having this multifaceted device that can do the gaming, that can do the casual stuff, but then you can dock it into your workstation and work.
Here's what's fun too. Trogdor is getting LTE. I saw that today, and that's not like, oh wow, LTE. You know, we've known that. Like, the Acer we have in there right now, the Spin 513, has an LTE variant. They already announced it. Like, that's not surprising. But it becomes more interesting when you start thinking about this little Coach Z tablet having LTE too, and maybe being able to somehow forward stuff via Google Voice.
Yep.
And Google. Look, I don't have to take my phone with me today.
Yeah, just take our tablet. Phone hub, whenever that finally fleshes out. I mean, who knows what that looks like?
Some of the possibilities there become pretty enticing.
Well,
it may take something like Google 5.
Will Windows take phone calls with the Android My Phone thing?
I don't think it'll take calls.
I don't think
it'll,
no.
I have it installed on this.
In Parallels.
Well, I mean, it prompts you to set it up. I don't know if it does. Because Samsung has their thing.
Yeah, Samsung's thing is like, I don't know if it's an addendum to that or if it's its own thing. I'm not sure.
I think it uses the Windows thing and then it has something
builds
that
onto
works.
It.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to try that.
But my hope would be that one day, even if there's never a Chrome OS phone, that Chrome OS is easily capable to do this kind of thing. Like, it would be worth, to me, it would be worth it. I would move my phone service over to something like Google Fi if it meant, hey, with just a data connection, an LTE connection, you can have phone service to be able to just, you know, I'm going to turn my phone off and leave it in the bag.
You have your watch, you have your...
There's your quick notifications.
You have your earbuds for taking phone calls and, you know, why not?
And you can just roll with that most days.
The thing we've talked about, though, is like the getting a phone call and waking up the device, essentially.
Sure.
Like, that's a whole thing that they'd have to figure out, but it's possible, of course. So one last thing on this. obviously, like, build materials, I think, dictate a lot of the price of a product. So we don't know any of that yet. But kind of based on what you've seen and maybe trying to compare it to other products in the HP lineup, like, if you had to throw out a price range, what are you thinking here?
$499.
That was very quick.
Oh, I've thought about it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You haven't published that anywhere, have you?
No, but here's the reason.
You heard it first on the Chromecast.
Here's the reason that I would go that route, and that may just be for the tablet.
Sure, yeah.
Might not be a keyboard included. If you look at what iPads go for, now granted, you can get the plain iPad now for like $350, I think, the entry level model.
$349, I think, is what it is, yeah.
But it's got a couple years old processor in it. It usually has the least amount of storage they can muster, and, you know, it's a cost saving iPad. So maybe $399 for just, if we're doing just the tablet, maybe $399 is a better price. But that Acer that's in there, that's the reason. It's a Snapdragon 7C Chromebook. It's all aluminum. It's got a lot of niceties. It's a glass trackpad, backlit keyboard, 1080p IPS screen that gets nice and bright. Like, it's a nice Chromebook. Like, it's got me excited too. I can't wait for that thing to get in production
and get the final version. Yeah, it's going to be exciting.
It's nice. And it starts at $399, I think. Is that right?
Yeah.
When they announced its price, the entry level of it. So slap the keyboard off of that thing. You know, it's going to be a nicer screen and probably needs to be nicer build quality. Like, you know, well, I don't know. The Acer's, it's all aluminum. Yeah. So, you know,
this thing's all aluminum and kind of looking some nice edges.
Yeah. With the screen upgrades and, you know, you got to deal with the figuring out the hinge, and there's some work going in there, some of the USI stuff. So it's got NFC wireless charging. So that's how they're going to handle the pen stuff. So there's some things in there that A, are first for Chromebooks, and B,
it's going to add a little cost.
You got to think about it in a different way when you don't have two components to a laptop, when everything's all in one piece. So there's some thought has to go into it, some engineering, R&D, all that kind of stuff. My guess, let me say $399 without a keyboard or pen, right? Just the
total package, maybe closer to $500.
Yeah.
I love it. I can't wait. I can't wait. I literally can't wait for this thing.
Super interesting, yeah. Especially as a docked device. I know. That's what gets me super excited. If the keyboard's great, cool. I would use the setup I have now. But if the keyboard's just okay, you know, it would be like, that's the travel thing. But when it's at my desk, flip that kickstand out, pop in the dock, and pull out my nice Logitech stuff. And then when I'm ready to go, pop it out. Or when it's lunchtime and then we're going to jump in a match of PUBG, I'm going to pick that up instead.
Super
exciting to think about.
I'll pay $500 for that.
So there's your state, right?
Yeah.
You've got what feels like meandering and question marks everywhere, but right smack dab in the middle of it is this awesome thing. Great hope?
Yeah.
Yes and no. Like, this, if this one device materializes and is 95% as good as we're hoping it's going to be, mixing that with the popularity and price of the Duet. Because the Duet's not like going to vanish tomorrow. It's like, it's going to still be around. Mm-hmm.
And people still love it.
Between $200 and $300. Yeah, I mean,
people are going to keep buying that.
It's a no-brainer.
Sure.
Then it's all of a sudden like, well, I know it's minimal, but the Chrome OS tablet market or segment feels very in a very good spot now. So it's, I don't know. Yeah. It's
right. Weird. And then you look at, you know, Google just announced on the blog earlier this week about the new artist, or not new, but artist tools,
creativity
and things like that.
Stuff, yeah.
They're pushing the creativity stuff. So, you know, even if the Chrome OS tablet market doesn't explode and we get 50 new devices, they're, like you said,
ones,
they're
yeah.
obviously really honing in on tablet mode. And that in and of itself should spur the OEMs to want to make a good tablet.
Right.
If you have someone that truly desires and can and is capable of creating on a Chrome OS tablet, then how long is it before someone, what is it, Acer that has the creator line?
Concept D and stuff.
But before someone makes like a Microsoft or Acer concept style device where it's a full blown tablet that, you know,
do
it's
an
designed
Acer.
Just for creating. And then you get, you know, Adobe Rush comes along and all this other stuff comes along.
Yep.
And you literally have a creation station that runs Chrome OS.
Yep.
I mean,
Let's do it. All right. We're going to take a quick break for one more ad and we will be right back. Today's episode of the Chromecast is brought to you by Visor for Chromebooks. If you manage Chromebooks for a school or a school district, You'll need to listen to this, especially if you're tracking those Chromebooks in a spreadsheet. Visor for Chromebooks is a Chromebook management solution, and it seamlessly integrates with the Google Admin Console and your student information system. With Visor for Chromebooks, you can easily see which student has which Chromebook, manage repairs, and automate processes for lost or stolen devices, such as notifying parents and remotely disabling the device. So ditch those spreadsheets and do a Google search right now for Visor for Chromebooks. That's V-I-Z-O-R for Chromebooks. Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. We are going to switch gears, and for our last segment here, we're going to talk about another segment of the Chromebook world that has been a bit weird as of late.
Yeah, as of 2020.
I was going to say basically. For a year, really.
Well, yeah, it's been almost a year. Like
we went Samsung into, Samsung was CES.
Yeah, we went to CES, super excited.
436
delivered, and then it stopped.
Yeah, and then it was like
when we talk high end,
and it was like, oh, are we going to get any other devices? And who are these for anymore? That was the question. Like we were talking in the in the office before we started here. It's like who are these Chromebooks made for? These high-end Chromebooks, you know, let's just say $1,000 Chromebooks.
Yeah, I would say $800 plus, really.
Yeah.
Premium, I mean, high-end.
The way that we lay them out in our 2020. Yeah, I mean,
If you have $650 to spend, you can get a killer Chromebook that's going to do what 95% of the people are doing with Chromebooks. So, yeah.
And we set that $650 bar just because there are some good ones at $630 that we do feel like are kind of I would say they're upper middle class, they're upper mid range Chromebooks. Like I don't want to call them like high end Chromebooks, even though that's kind of what it feels like.
Yeah. Because the spin's weird because it's priced perfectly. That's exactly where it should be to say, yes, this device is worth exactly what it retails for. The problem is the premium Chromebook market has always been so weird. So if you had handed us the Spin 713 before they debuted it and said how much it was going to cost, I would have told you $799 because that's how they price these things. And if you look at the other Spin 713 models that are available with more RAM and storage and different processors, even the lesser processors, their pricing is whack.
Right.
I mean, it's all completely out of whack based on looking at this device. So the premium and mid-range premium device market is just weird, and it's just going to get even stranger because we know there's a buttload of Tiger Lake and more Hatch devices coming.
Yeah.
What does that look like to flood the market with $800 and up devices, though?
So here, to back up for a second, I think we talked about this briefly last week when we talked, or 2 weeks ago when we did the best of 2020. You know, the high-end market basically in 2020 was the Galaxy Chromebook, the leftovers of the Pixelbook Go, the high-end Pixelbook Go's, and the Asus Flip 436. Yes, there were some, if you spec'd out some, and we're talking consumer Chromebooks here, if you spec'd out the 713, which can you get that thing, the higher spec ones, like,
you can get from like CDW.
Or if you go back to the prior generation of it, you'll still find it sometimes with eighth gen stuff in it, and it's still $900. And then if we talk, you know, corporate Chromebooks, so Chromebook Enterprise devices, so the Dells of the world, the HP
Pro
C640 can be spec'd out to get up into this range. Those are weird and almost like a completely sidebar conversation. Kind of, we'll actually come back to that near in a second, but I'm talking consumer Chromebooks, like stuff you go to Best Buy or you're going to see it.
It's going to be sitting out on a shelf.
You're going to see it Amazon. Yeah. You're like the ones that people are actually going to see and consumers are going to see. It really came down to the Samsung and the Asus 436, and that was it. Until like this week, we got our hands on the HP Elite C1030 Chromebook, and you can append Enterprise if you want to. They do sell one that doesn't have that appended. It doesn't come with the upgrade. Yeah,
somebody asked when are they going to start selling. You can buy this thing.
Buy it right
it's
now.
Available.
Yeah, only on HP. It needs to show up at Best Buy. If they really want people to take this thing serious as a consumer Chromebook, you know, it needs to be on Best Buy and Amazon too, you know. But it's $999 for the entry level model. They sent us like the souped up one with some upgrades that I personally wouldn't even get. Like we've got the anti-glare screen. That's fine. I'm not a huge anti-glare person. I'll just adjust the angle of my screen if I need it, because it adds polarization and stuff to it that it changes the brightness and stuff. Like I would prefer not to have that. But the entry level is Core i3, 8 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs NVMe storage. You get a fingerprint scanner. You get USI stylus support. You get a privacy screen switch on the side. You get some cool, fun top row buttons. So this would be the Vivaldi keyboard if anybody keeps up with the really nerdy deep level commits. It's where they can
You guys,
yeah, me and Gabe and like three other people. Yes. Michael, I bet you Michael knows what the Vivaldi keyboard is. So all that is basically in the repositories they can say, yeah, we want to invoke the Vivaldi keyboard here, and we're going to change our top row keyboard. That's all it comes down to. And so this one has some niceties. I kind of like it. I used to just be like, no, Chrome OS needs to be this, and you learn your keyboard shortcuts and shut up. But I kind of like that. I kind of like that they can add these new ones up top. So we've got
Take your keyboard and you
if
like it.
If you've ever received that email from Robbie, we apologize. He wasn't in his right mind that day.
You say thank you and you take your keyboard.
You leave me alone. This one has the addition of a screenshot key, which we had seen commits adding the screenshot key. We're like, what? Who's going to do that? Here it is. It's on this keyboard.
It's kind of cool.
It's nice. I mean, it's just there. You touch it, boom, you got it. It's got its own little icon. Cool. If I hold
it. So what is that on mine? It's the...
You'd hit control...
to the right of the refresh.
So this one just has more keys. Yeah. It's not taking the place of anything. Yeah. It just crams more keys up here. And so if I hit alt in that screenshot key, it does the same thing where I can, you know, draw around a thing. And eventually, once the new screenshot stuff comes in, Chrome 88, it looks like.
Looks like, probably.
All that stuff will be triggered by this button. Next to that, you've got the standard screen brightness buttons, but then you've got two more brightness buttons that are just for the keyboard. So, and they look basically like they do
on a Mac.
How they
get all those in there? It's not like your keyboard deck's bigger than mine.
I have a touch bar.
You have the dumb bar.
It is a little sun.
Are they that much shorter?
Oh, yeah, they're little baby keys.
I'll say this, the keyboard backlighting on the C1030 is so much better than on the C640.
It is a half sun. Yeah, the screen brightness is like a little full sun, and then your screen's full sun and keyboard is half sun.
Yeah, and that's basically what they stole it from Mac OS probably.
Absolutely.
And maybe Windows probably has some of those keys too. Mm-hmm. And then you get the volume buttons, the play pause button, and a lock button up top. So you got a bunch of function keys up here, and it's kind of cool. I dig it. I like being able to quickly, man, if I don't quit hitting this mic stand. I like to be able to quickly reach up and change it, especially on this device because it's gray keys. And if you use a device with gray keys on the keyboard, they're a little finicky when it comes to sunlight and how much sun, like if not enough sun's hitting it, you need the backlighting. But if too much sun's hitting it, the backlighting makes the keys hard to see. So you need to adjust it pretty much all the time. And so it's nice to have those buttons there. So anyway, so you get this cool custom keyboard layout. There are versions of this that have privacy screen, the digital privacy screen built in. So it would, you know, keep your stuff invisible basically on the left, right,
off
up, down.
Angle, yeah.
If you're on a plane, that does not come in the entry level. But, you know, we talk about this cool keyboard, the switch on the side, the fingerprint scanner, USI stylus support. You're getting a 13.5-inch screen that's 3x2, so the exact same size of screen that's in the Spin 713. But when you put this device up against the 713, I mean, it literally vertically from top to bottom cuts off almost an inch off the build. So the whole thing just feels so much smaller and tighter. It feels like almost like a little 12-inch Chromebook or something. The keyboard is, you know, full size, but it goes pretty far to the edges because, you know, there's barely any bezels.
It reminds me of when we went to, it was CES 2 years ago when they had the C434 when it first came out.
Yeah.
Because I had the original Spin 13 in my bag, I think.
We have footage of it.
So the C434 is...
But it's a 16x9.
Right, but what... Is it 13.3?
14-inch.
Is it 14? Yeah, okay, so 14 it's 14-inch. The Asus is 13.5, but that because they finally started trimming bezels down and everything, it looks so small. It was so little. And that's the way this is. It does not...
It doesn't look like a 13.5-inch
Way
device.
More screen than you think you're getting.
Yeah, and so when you open it up, it's like... I don't know, it's this visceral kind of feeling. Yeah. You open it and you're just like, wow, look at all that screen real estate I've got. Now, it's not as high res as the 713, which some people would take offense to, but at normal viewing angles, I almost can't tell. And part of, too, like anti-glare screens create a little bit of graininess, so there's a little bit of that going on, too. So I think 1080p is fine on this screen size. A little bit more resolution wouldn't hurt anybody's feelings, I don't think. But, you know, you're not worrying about battery life issues with trying to push a 4K screen and all that stuff. And so you're getting this workspace that, again, I've said this 100 times, but it's worth repeating. At this diagonal measure, this is the height of a 15.6-inch 16x9 screen. So just take a big, huge Chromebook, cut the edges off on the sides that you don't generally use, and that's the feeling you get. It just it feels spacious. And then you close it, and it's like this little guy has this much space. The hinge feels great. Like it's tight and solid at any angle. It converts. It's nice and thin. So when you convert it, it feels great. It's made out of all the same aluminum all the way around, which sounds silly to have to say, but with Chromebooks, we get plastic bottoms a lot, or we get an aluminum top and then some sort of like weird composite keyboard deck. That's what the 713 is. Aluminum top, composite keyboard deck, aluminum bottom. We get like, that's how they cut corners. That's how they figure stuff out. This is all the same metal all throughout. It just feels premium. I mean, all around. It feels fantastic. And I've enjoyed using it a lot over the last few days. But then that adds the question, like, okay, there's another top high-end Chromebook. So is this worth $1,000? Is it worth people going and spending $1,000 on? And I think the answer is both yes and no. I think it just depends on who you are. And you'd mentioned this, we kind of alluded to this earlier. Like, it depends on the type of user that you are, because ultimately, whether or not something's worth $1,000 to you depends on what that $1,000 is getting you. For someone like me who has decided already that Chrome OS is my operating system, it has been for years. And it's not just because, oh, I work at Chrome Unbox, so I'm going to force my, no, like Chrome Unbox exists because people like us decided this is going to be our go-to, that we like computing in this way. Okay, so if that's the case, if everything I do computing-wise, whether it's printing something or figuring out this or building a website or doing graphic design or whatever, if everything that I want to do on a computer, again, you can be like, well, you can't video edit on it properly. Well, I don't want to video edit. That's why Joe and I made an agreement a long time ago. Like, I needed somebody that could do that and that wants to do that and that likes to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't. In my free time, I'm never going to be editing a video unless being forced to do so.
Right. I mean, and it's even the same then,
I'm
reason,
usually going to bring it to Joe. And like, could you do this?
Yeah, it's the same reason we purchased a Mac Mini, because we know that for what Joe does, right, that's the best thing we can buy.
Yeah.
For what we do, we love Chrome OS.
Right.
And there's nothing we do that we can't do on these devices. Right, right. Robbie was using Chromebooks doing his previous job long before. I mean, he gave me my first Chromebook. I mean, he handed me an HP 14 with LTE, and I'm like, okay, let's see what this is all about. And it just
so like, yeah, for those people like,
that are just sold on Chrome OS, it, like, right? Yeah. It's because, yeah, once you get to that point, it's not about, well, which one's better for me? I'm going to go buy a laptop. Should I get Windows? Should I get Mac OS? Or should I get a Chromebook? That's not the question I'm asking. Every time I pick up a MacBook or a Windows machine, I'm frustrated because I don't like multiple things about the way that they compute, because a lot of it's based on legacy computing. Chrome OS is built on the web and lightweight computing and cloud-based stuff that leverages servers, and I like that. I tend to like that, but that's not everybody. And so the question I'm asking isn't whether or not the Chromebook is the right purchase for $1,000. I'm not walking into Best Buy with $1,000 and choosing which laptop. I'm choosing which Chromebook. And so that's a very different thing to have to go do. And so you have to ask yourself, like, am I in that camp? Am I the person that said, yes, I'm not asking it whether it's Windows or Mac or Chrome OS. I'm saying, which Chromebook am I going to get? If you're that person and you just want something nice, you want something that has a better screen than most. You want something that has, like, the keyboard and trackpad on this thing are straight butter. Like, I think that's going to be the review of this. Like, it's just butter. Like, the soft touch aluminum's buttery, and the performance is just fantastic. I love this Chromebook. It's really great. Should most people go buy it? I don't know. That's a tougher sell, I think. I think for the person that wants premium stuff, sure, as long as you're sold on Chrome OS. Because I've seen people already say, well, what's the point of these high-end Chromebooks when there's an M1-powered MacBook Air that I can get for $1,000 as well? And that's a great argument for someone who's walking in with $1,000 to choose what laptop they're going to buy. And that's someone that doesn't see the difference. Like, if you're only going to use it for Facebook and you're only going to use it for email, then, yeah, I mean, the question is, I don't know.
Which
I don't
operating know why, system do you like?
Yeah, do you want to be in Apple's? Preference? Like, if you don't like Apple's ecosystem and you don't want to buy into all that stuff and get involved in all that stuff, you're going to constantly be fighting against using Apple stuff. They make it easy to use their stuff because they want you in their ecosystem. If you don't want that, then you don't want to go buy a $1,000 MacBook.
Yeah.
But say you're the type of person that wanted to spend $1,000 on a very nice crafted aluminum thing with a great screen and a great keyboard and trackpad, and I just don't want an Apple thing. Well, okay, this is a good purchase for you. It's just not going to be for everybody because those mid-range Chromebooks have gotten so good.
Right,
because
so I mean, that's the thing. If you told me you just wanted the most well-designed device you could buy, you didn't want a convertible, you just wanted the nicest device that you could buy, and you like Chrome OS, you're fine with Chrome OS, and you had $650, I'm going to tell you to buy a Pixelbook Go. It's not the most powerful. It's not the latest model on the market, but it's still the most well-crafted Chromebook that you can buy if you don't care about convertible or USI and stuff like that.
Right.
You're going to love, you got to like the way it looks. I mean, period. You know, let's just do it. So,
and if you're not concerned about having the latest gen processors and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, that's the beauty of where Chrome OS is going. It's not like there's four or five Chromebooks out there now. There's a whole slew of them. And so if $1,000 feels like too much for you and you're like, I don't need all that premium stuff. I just need it to get this stuff done. Well, great. Go buy a more utilitarian Chromebook. I have no shame in saying I've been using the Spin 713 pretty much since it came out as my primary Chromebook. Not because it looks great. Frankly, it's kind of ugly, and it's utilitarian looking, and there are edges that don't line up, and there are seams in places that feel a little scratchy, and, there are things about it I would love for them to change. I would love to take the 713's formula and do something closer to what the C1030 does, but that comes at cost. I mean, those things cost money to develop and manufacture something with tighter margins and make it better in a better package costs more money. Yeah, it just does.
Because I'm telling you, like, if you're not all about the design and the just perfection of design, Costco ever drops this $499, 8-gig Lenovo Flex Chromebook.
Yeah, it's another perfect
example. That will be my go-to recommendation for anyone who says, I need a Chromebook that's powerful enough to do what I want and it has all this stuff.
Especially
because
it's probably going to have the 300-nit screen too, right?
I would guess so because the ones that are overseas are. So 300-nit screen, 8 gigs of RAM, because that honestly is the only problem with the Flex.
Yeah, 4 gigs is no bueno.
People that want something that's current generation and is really, really good, but they're not that it looks bad. It looks fine and,
it's fine.
And it feels good. It's a good, well-designed device, but they're not all about that ultra premium aesthetic and build quality. That'll be the go-to.
Well, and what's funny, like I was, we got the Flex out today because it was in Canary and I was testing something. So I had it up on my desk with this C1030 and I'd go from typing on the HP over to it. And it's funny. It's just like with TVs, like, in their own silo, like you have a TV in your house, that picture doesn't have as much black level. And you don't think about any of that stuff. You just watch, and as long as it's not offending you, you're fine. You just move on and don't think about it. But the minute someone brings something next to it, and you're like, I could have that. It's in that comparison.
The new OLEDs, you look at something like that, you're man.
Look at those black levels. Oh, my God. And so what happens then is you see that and you think, I need that other thing. But as long as you can keep stuff in a silo, you don't tend to see it or feel it. Like I would have told you before this morning, if you said, what do you think? Keyboard, trackpad on the Flex. I would have said, pretty good.
Pretty good. Yeah.
After using this and going to it feels terrible.
Yeah.
It feels loose and clacky. It's not that bad. It's just that this one is crafted in a much better way. The C1030 is... it's just a more premium device. And we've learned over the years, like as we've talked to different manufacturers that make peripherals and stuff like that, like keyframes are expensive. You know, it cost a lot of money to put a better keyframe in a device, you know, because, again, it's not like HP makes the keyframe. They probably go get it from somebody who either spent a little bit of time putting together a basic keyframe, or they spent a lot of time researching and developing and making and manufacturing a really nice one that has great travel, but it's not taking up a lot of space and is really quiet and all this kind of stuff. And so they're going to have to go spend more money to go get that to put into this device to make it have that premium feel to it. And all of those pieces just add up over time until you just have a more expensive Chromebook. And again, it just goes back to, are you looking for a functional device that just gets the job done, gets out of the way? Or are you bought and sold into Chrome OS and you're looking for something that is high end? Because then that argument then goes into what Gabe was saying. We do have a massive amount of Tiger Lake Chromebooks. Now, granted, those Chromebooks could be anywhere from Celeron up to Core i7.
Right.
So every Tiger Lake Chromebook isn't going to be a premium Chromebook. End, yeah. Just like every Hatch 10th Gen Comet Lake Chromebook isn't this. You know, like most of them aren't high-end. So we'll get some more. We're going to get some more Chromebooks that are high-end Chromebooks, no doubt. It's just becoming weird to think about how manufacturers choose to leverage that stuff. Because I think 2020 changed some things pretty significantly between the Spin and the Flex 5. All of a sudden, you're seeing these Chromebooks that get enough done. It's kind of like your Pixel 4a 5G. Is it the best phone made? No. You know, the refresh rate could come up and, you know, the performance could be a little faster. But is it getting done what you need done out of it, and are you okay with it? Sure. Well, now all of a sudden you have to call into question, why would I buy a $1,000 phone? And what's in that phone that would cause me to upgrade from this? And that gap is the question. And it's the same thing for Chromebooks now. We used to have $300 or $400 budget devices. And then if you started getting the nice stuff, if you got the latest gen processors and a fingerprint scanner, $800.
Yeah.
Like it was just this huge gap. Mm-hmm. And that gap has just narrowed now that it's not as easy of an answer. Like, which Chromebook should I buy? It's just not easy anymore. No. And next year, it's going to be insanely difficult. And so, like, trying to educate people on how to choose which one is better for them is going to be more important than just saying, buy this one. Like, if you wanted this, buy this Chromebook. It's not that simple anymore because lots of them have that stuff.
Well, and I mean, I think there's a couple resources out there to help people try to do this. I think I'm always trying to think about, like, someone listening to this, like, what they're thinking. They're like, well, then what do I do? You know, like, what do I do to do this? Like, I think the Google Store. No. What's that page that has the new?
If you go to google.com/Chromebooks,
yeah, and it has like the premium plus and what was the other one?
So there's
premium.
There's just is it
plus? I thought there was three.
There's plus, premium, there's
not
and
listed. Basically,
yeah, they're just like these other cheap ones. Anywho,
the
like
other things.
There's that out there. I don't know. I think like, we cover so much stuff on our website. I think sometimes people can maybe get a little overwhelmed trying to like look through and educate themselves. I think, you know, obviously our videos are a great resource because those are kind of a more compact, tight presentation of something. But I mean, I'll tease a little bit. You know, we've got something in the works that I think will help people make decisions on this stuff too, more easily. I mean, at the end of the day, you still have to make the decision for yourself, like what you value and what you want.
Yeah,
we can't tell you exactly what to go buy.
Right. Like,
you have to figure out a couple of the criteria first. Right.
Right. And that's what we've done in the past when Robbie's done the video for that. And we've done, we try to help people understand if this is what you're looking for in a device, then this is, or this is what your use case is. These are the things you need to be looking for. And these are the things you need to avoid, because as we get more and more Chromebooks, it's kind of a double-edged sword. It's going to be more difficult because you have low-end Atom processors, but you know, the Tiger Lake chips, you're actually going to have, you have Celerons, you have Pentiums, you have all this different stuff. It becomes more and more difficult to figure out which one you want because the price ranges are so weird, but it also opens the door for manufacturers to have more room with what kinds of features they're going to offer on the devices, because you don't have to have a Core i5 Chromebook. You can have a Pentium Gold Chromebook, and it has enough performance for you. Then you can not sacrifice so much on whether or not it has a really good screen or if it has a backlit keyboard and stuff like that. So we just try to help guide you to the things that we know will work for you. But your buying decision should be based on what works for you combined with what you like in a device.
Right.
Yeah, because even some selection tool that says, oh, I want a Core i5, 8 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of storage. Well, there's Chromebooks in lots of different price ranges that fit that criteria.
Exactly.
And so it's not as simple. A spec sheet isn't enough anymore.
No, it's not.
So it becomes, and you can probably start seeing that in our reviews. Like, the style of the reviews is going to, and it's going to do this way more in 2021, be more about feel. It's going to be more about just like
aesthetic.
I like this.
And build and build decisions, you know, whether to do, you know, a crease down here or not to do it, you know, like all those little things.
Yeah, like the Flex 5. If the Flex 5 had 8 gigs of RAM and it was 300 nits, could you do your job from it?
Right. Yeah.
All day, every day. Would you go buy a Flex 5 if you didn't care about how much it costs, because you don't usually do that when you buy something.
No.
Would that be your pick?
No.
No, you'd buy the Spin.
Right.
Because you could buy the Samsung. You did buy the Samsung. You could buy the Asus if you wanted to. And he bought the Acer. So and he still has the Acer.
Yeah. So what drives that? And like trying to convey that, I think is important. It is difficult though.
Yeah.
Because it's personal preference. And the issue is, like, we have the opportunity to try and test all of these things. And so all we can do is say, I like this better or I like that better based on the way you...
We try to be as objective as we can, but at the end of the day, I mean, it's our experience using
this
thing.
It's an opinion.
You know? Yeah, it's an opinion.
And we're probably the worst people in the world to ask anyway, because, like, I like having a device around that has all the horsepower because of the stuff that I tinker with. But I also, if I know I'm going to sit down, I'm going to write for a long period of time, I'm going to write on the Pixelbook Go because I love typing on the Pixelbook Go.
I love the hush keys.
I love the way it feels and I love the way it looks. So we're just going to tell you buy all the Chromebooks because
just have a bunch.
We like them all.
You don't have to pick and choose. Yeah.
You buy a tablet for at home, then you have you have your browsing computer, and then you have your typing computer. I mean, or, you know, for a... If you're really wanting our advice, you can join our Canary crew and join our live stream and
you can be in Discord.
Yeah, we can chat with you all about exactly what you should go buy and have some in depth. Yeah. Shameless plug there. Bada bing, bada boom.
I mean, there's some benefit to being in there.
Absolutely,
we are in there.
You could just join for a month. You don't have to join for the entire year. I mean, obviously we would love it if you did that, but if you do, if like you're the type of person that you're super indecisive, or if you really want our opinion, because we try to answer as many emails and social media stuff as we can, but we just cannot manage that. There's no possible way with the volume of requests that we get now as we've grown. And so, you know, the Canary crew, and I mean, even the other tiers,
the
$10 tier that gets you in Discord, obviously is another good tier. If you want to ask us some direct questions and get our feedback on some things. So.
And the community that's in there.
The community is awesome.
There's other people that'll answer stuff.
We have a worldwide community there. There are people who probably know better than us. We have an enterprise channel, and that's really cool because I'm learning this enterprise stuff, but we have guys in there that do this for a living. We have one guy in Australia who that's what he does. He does cloud computing, sets up stuff for other companies, you know, and
it's cool.
If you need an answer, the good chance you'll find it there.
Yeah. So shameless plug, but also it is a great resource, and that's why we built it. That's why we decided to go with Patreon for all of this stuff. Ooh, and we just rolled out annual memberships. If you're interested in that, I'm going to do a promo. I just thought of this yesterday. There was some email that I'd gotten from Patreon talking about this, but
saw that
we're going to do a promo where you can get basically like 2 months free.
Nice.
To get going on this annual membership stuff. So, okay. I think that's it for today. We really appreciate you all tuning in. This is kind of a new format we did today, splitting it up a little bit more. So if you liked it, let us know. If you didn't like it, let us know. Shoot us an email, info@ChromeUnboxed, or you can hit us up on Twitter @ChromeUnboxed. Use the hashtag #TheChromeCast. But yeah, we really appreciate you all tuning in, and we'll catch you all next week. See you. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. You can find show notes over at chromeunboxed.com/podcast. And if you want to stay up to date with everything that's happening in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS, make sure to check out our website, chromeunboxed.com, and follow us on social media by searching for @ChromeUnboxed. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.